Before we get to that point, let us review some of the important issues that we need to have a sense of, I think, before we start the Masechet. So first of all, we need to take into consideration the structure of the Masechet as a whole. And it turns out that there's two ways, really, that this Masechet is organized. That it depends on the particular, there's differences between the Bavli, Yerushalmi. Some say it was just a question of how it evolved over time. But the truth is, it's a very clear-cut and reasonable understanding of why there are two approaches. The point is that the Masechet includes three major themes. The three major themes are, of course, the dinim of Chometz BePesach, and then we have the concepts that are nogea, the Seder Shel Pesach, which is a whole different issue, a whole different set of mitzvahs, and then we have the dinim of the Korban Pesach, which is essentially a kachim issue. Now, this Masechet deals with all three of those issues. So the question is how to organize it. So if we take a look at the Masechet as a description of our involvement in the mitzvahs, it's organized in our version very, very clearly. We start off with the night before, which is the Bedikas Chametz night, go on to the morning, then go on to the dinim of the Korban Pesach, which is in the afternoon. And then at the very end, we have the dinim of the Seder Shel Pesach, and that is basically the way we have it. Now, the other way of organizing it is to put the Inyanim of the Korban Pesach at the end, and then to go directly from the Inyanim of Hashbasa to through the afternoon, making Kiddush, doing the Seder, and that is what we have as the closing parak. To others, that is the parak that comes before the dinner of the Korban Pesach, and then we have what is called the Pesach Sheni. It's a play on words, obviously, which is the other Pesach, which has to do with all of the dinim of Korban Pesach, which has nothing in common, really, with the flavor of the Masechet at the beginning, for obvious reasons, because it's fundamentally a dine kachim thing and gets us all involved in some of those dinim. Okay, but that's the overall structure. Now, in terms of understanding what this first part of the Masechet is, so we do, it's true, we do start with the idea of the Bedikas Chametz, but there's obviously deeper issues that we need to think about why the Masechet begins this way. And that's because Bedikas Chametz is not only a time issue. Bedikas Chametz is our introduction into what is absolutely unique about the elements of Pesach and its mitzvahs. So let's consider, I mean, we never have such a concept elsewhere, correct? There's no idea of getting everything out of your house and, I mean, going wild to get out these little tiny pieces of chametz all over the place and so on. Where does that come from? And what lies behind it? And what are the mitzvahs that are associated with it? So there's something that's very important to note. And that is that in Pesach, we have mitzvahs that appear, nothing similar appears elsewhere. And that is that when it comes to chametz, we have this new mitzvah, what we call, in short, Bal Yera'eh and Bal Yematzeh, as two different mitzvahs, in which the Torah has mitzvahs, we're going to get into this later, that we cannot have any chametz visible, whatever that means, we'll see what that, particularly why we use that language, and no chametz can be found, whether it's chametz or sa'or, one pasuk uses chametz, and one the other pasuk uses sa'or, and we need to understand that there's no real difference between those of halacha. Sa'or is simply supercharged chametz. It's sourdough that can make other things chametz, and chametz is just regular fermented chamisha mine daga. So the idea that the Torah wants us to inhabit a chametz-free zone on Pesach is, oh my gosh. I mean, it's one thing to say that you're supposed to not eat a particular food. I mean, we're used to that kind of thing, Yisurei Achila, and even Yisurei Achila that come because of the special time, let's say on Yom Kippurim. I mean, but the idea that there is this concept of a different space in which you literally, it shall not be found, it shall not be seen. However we end up defining the nature of that finding or seeing, just taking it on the simplest level is that it's changing the entire sense of where we are on Pesach. Now, There's another very fascinating issue which we need to take into consideration, because that alone teaches us that, oh my gosh, we've got to do all types of preparations in order for that not to happen. Because, I mean, we can't start worrying about it on Pesach when the Torah says, Bal Yerael, Bal Yematzeh, it's too late. Once Pesach starts, what are we going to do then? We've already been over in inhabiting a space which is not chametz free. And this is not just a physical space, by the way, which would say we could put up big signs that say chametz free zone, you know, like the drugs. It's not the point. It's a mental space as well. Because when we're talking about a chametz-free zone, we're talking about even in terms of your ownership. There's nowhere around. But the Torah says that it cannot be in your rishus, which does not mean your local rishus, in which case we are talking about your mind inhabiting a chametz-free zone, which is far more than just a description of the issue of your local room that you happen to be sitting in. So that is an amazing concept, and it's ipso facto mechayev us in doing something before Pesach, because otherwise it's going to be too late. That's clear. That itself would be an amazing change, and then it gets worse, because the Torah says an additional mitzvah, and that's called the mitzvah of tashbitu. So b'yom harishon, tashbitu se'or mibatechem. What in the world does tashbitu even mean, Bichlal? And what is the Yom HaRishon? Obviously, the Yom HaRishon can't mean the first day of the Chag, because then you'd already be over. Not to mention the fact that in terms of the dinim of the Korban Pesach, we're already told that you're not allowed to be zoveach the Pesach with chometz in your rishus. Lo tizbach ala chametz dam zivchi, but you only shech the Pesach on Erev Pesach, which means that somehow or other, you've got to have gotten rid of it already by Erev Pesach. So we've got a number of different reasons. First of all, it's got to be out of your rishus for the Korban Pesach, but that's not dependent on the Korban Pesach. That's also dependent on the Yom Rishon Tashbitu, whatever Tashbitu means, which we'll discuss in a moment. So that means that we've got three different reasons, really, three different indications that we have to deal with whatever getting rid of chametz means. So what does getting rid of chametz before Pesach mean? What does the word tashbitu mean? Now, Rashi explains in a very beautiful insight that the concept of tashbitu is very, very strange to use a word like that. I mean, if the Torah wanted us to actually get rid of the chametz, physically get rid of the chametz, would it not be mechayev a physical act? Beer chametz, tivaru chametz mibatechem. Tashbitu is almost a passive kind of thing. What do you mean tashbitu? See to it that it is inactive. Weird kind of word, right? And in what sense is the chametz shoveit? Beautiful insight of Rashi, who explains that that is the reason that the chachamim were omit on the fact that the idea is almost a conceptual idea and not a physical idea. And from there comes the notion that tashbitu has to do with the way that your consciousness relates to the chametz, an amazing idea in which you can change the space in which you live by changing your consciousness, which is unbelievable, because obviously, ultimately, your space is defined by the nature of your consciousness. So how could you do that? So you have to firmly define the way that you view your space. And that is, what is that? That stuff that looks like crumbs or pieces of bread. Dirt. Meaningless. Not present as far as I'm concerned. What a weird idea. And that is called bitul chametz. In which case the tashbitu itself in the Torah is opening up the door to a mental tashbitu. If in your mind, and you'll note that this is what we say when we actually do the bitul chametz, v'lehevi ke'afra de'ara. Now we'll talk about that extra word of hefker, which is quite confusing, in a moment. But it should be like the dirt of the earth. That is a mental concept, which is a very interesting way of being mekayim what appears to be a physical mitzvah. Now, obviously, there are other ways of being mekayim tashbitu, because if you want to, if you would actually get rid of every piece of chometz that you had that could possibly have been within the definition of Baal Yera'eh or Baal Yematzeh, which we need to define later on, so then the physical act should be just as good as the mental act. So even though the Torah is using the word tashbitu, it seems to be a broadening of what you're capable of doing in order to get rid of your chometz and not a limiting. I mean, of course, you could say, now, wait a minute. I mean, just because you went on this massive search for chometz, how do you know you found all of your chometz? And therefore, maybe the Torah would not rely on your actually physically getting rid of the chometz, because if you change your mental vision of the chometz, then you know you've affected all of the chometz that needed to be dealt with. But if you're going to just be going out on a hunt for chometz, you cannot be certain that you have found every piece of chometz. So maybe you're mechuyav additionally in the tashbitu mentally, even if you would go out and destroy all your chometz. Now, the Ran says that's not possible. Why is it not possible? Because whenever the Torah actually demands something of us, the Lashon of the Ran is, HaTorah somech al hachazakot. In other words, we are never asked to do more than what we believe is the maximum that can be done. We've done whatever we can. There's no way that you would be required, says the Ran, to actually change if you physically got rid of all your chometz. It's not your problem if there's a little bit of chometz that you forgot. And therefore, that can't be the reason for the bittul. The reason for the bittul, suggests the Ran, and indeed the Rambam says something similar, is that we don't really believe that people know how to use their consciousness. Many people don't. And the idea that you can change your space by changing the way that you are aware of space is something that to many people doesn't even make any sense. They've never entertained how it is, the notion of how it is that their relationship to things is actually formed by their brain and not just by what they take for granted is the way things sort of are, whatever that means, right? So because of that, Chazal did not want you to rely as a general rule that would apply to everybody that they could just go around being mevatel, because to them that's just words. Okay, so I'm saying it should be like Afra Da'ara. It isn't really Afra Da'ara. Now, that would account for this additional idea which Tosfos says, the idea is not, Tosfos doesn't buy into what it is that Rashi understands of the change between Tevaru and Tashbitu, that allows you to consciously change things. No. Tosfos says what allows you to consciously change things is a halacha, not some kind of weird new age idea of consciousness. It must be an act of hefker. Now, we know that hefker is a perfectly valid legal idea. So what you're really doing when you're being mevatel, and this is where that word hefker ka'afra da'ara comes from, is you're actually making something that you own, not your own, by being mafker it. Now, I can do that. I mean, if I have something that is mine, then it remains legally mine until I actually give up my balut. I give up my balut by a formal act of hefker. The problem is, of course, that a formal act of hefker requires three people. It requires me to actually say it. And according to some, until somebody else actually takes that hefker, it won't even, it will remain in my rishus. It won't be removed from my rishus. So how can we actually use hefker as a solution to Baal Yera'eh, Baal Yematzeh in a technical sense of hefker? So that's a problem. And the way that the Aruch HaShulchan understands the solution to that problem is that clearly hefker over here does not have to deal with the normal sense of ownership. Why is that? That is because you actually do not really own your chometz the way you own other things. And this is another concept, and it's called Shnei Dvarim Einam Berushuto Shel Adam Ve'asa'an HaTorah Ki'ilu Heim Berushutam. There are two places in the Torah where you don't own something, and the Torah gave you a din of an owner. What are those two things? So one is a bor b'rishut rabbi. You dig a hole in the middle of the street and somebody falls in, you need to pay. you don't need to pay because you caused damage, because causing damage as a grumma is not a siba, as it is in modern civil law, is not considered to be a reason to make you pay for something. The Torah's concept of torts is built around the fact that you are responsible for your things. Ba'al ha'bor yishalem. The owner of the bor must pay. What do you mean, owner of the bor? How can I own a hole in the middle of the street? I don't own that hole. Ah, but the Torah has turned you into the owner of the hole for all legal purposes. Now, the same thing is true about Chometz on Pesach, because another very special thing about Chometz on Pesach is that it's asur b'hana'ah. And it is not only asur to eat, you are not allowed to get any kind of benefit whatsoever. So does it have any financial value if you can't have any benefit from it? Absolutely zero. You can't sell it. You can't make money from it. And therefore, how could you have an ownership of something that doesn't have any legally defined value? It's the same thing as owning a hole. How can you own a hole? Ah, but the point is that the Torah has indeed made you the owner of the chametz. Now, for that type of ownership, it is indeed sufficient, Dynasty Aruch HaShulchan, to indicate that you want to have nothing to do with that chometz, have no intention of getting anything out of it. And under that special limited concept of ownership, that hefker is clearly what Tosus believes would be good enough to serve as the bittul. So, okay, that begins our foray into what it is that's going on over here. Because if I could be mevatel, so whether it's a din in consciousness, I understand why Chazal wouldn't want me to rely on that. But according to Tosfos, that it's a din in hefker, that's a very classic idea. Why would the Gemara, or why would Chazal beit a gezeira that no, you've got to do this weird thing called bedikas chometz at night and get rid of all your chometz in the morning? Where would that come from if I could do bittul? So Tosfos has a very simple explanation. His explanation is because you might eat the chometz, not because of bal yira bal yimatzei. Because consider the unique situation of chometz. When you're dealing with other isurim, they are either blanket isurim. On Yom Kippur, you don't eat, or they are isurim that you are used to all year round. That is nevela. That is truma. And what are you going to say? That is wheat? What do you mean, that is wheat? I always eat wheat. So now I got to start thinking, is it the kind of wheat I'm eating? I mean, I don't get it. I've got two boxes, you know, one is kosher Pesach matzah, one is not kosher Pesach matzah, and I'm going to see one and I'm going to say, that I can't eat that. I mean, there's nothing in me that would possibly have that kind of reaction. So lacking anything that would point me to the not eat, do not eat, you're always concerned about casually putting something into your mouth. And then when it's too late, realizing, oh my God, that was chometz. So because of that, Tosfos says, the whole idea of doing the bedika and doing the beer chometz has to be done in addition, therefore, to doing this hefker and so on. So the hefker part is in terms of bal yira'eh bal yimatzeh, and the bedika part is in terms of maybe you will eat it. But then the other question is, if we take the opposite approach and we've done actually the physical biur, why do we still need to do the bittul? That's a question. I mean, I did what I could. I got rid of it. And the Torah is not mechayev me to do more than I can do and relies on the chazakot, which is true all over the place. Let's say I have a similar idea by Avodah Zarah, right? Lo yidbak biyatcha me'uma menacherem. Make sure there's nothing in your house that was part of the church's property and so on. Okay, so are you telling me I'm going to be over if I didn't recognize this and or it was buried under something and I didn't know it was there? Of course I'm not over. As soon as I find it, I get rid of it. That's all. So why is that not enough? As soon as you find it, you get rid of it. And here, the Gemara will explain later on that this is because of another concept. I hope you're keeping all these conceptual things and writing them down. Shema yimtza gluska yafa. Because what might happen is that in the event that there was something that you forgot, and in the top of some cabinet where now all of a sudden you're going up looking for something in Pesach, you suddenly find this lovely birthday cake that you forgot that your daughter had put up there on the top of the cabinet the week before Pesach from her birthday. Oh, man, you say, boy, does that look good. And then you say, oh, chas v'shalom, it's Pesach. But what happened in the moment that you said, oh, man, that looks good? If you hadn't been mevatel, and for that one moment, you did not grab that birthday cake and say, yeah, and run to the toilet to throw it out, right? So then during that time when you're considering, wow, that looks good, then your space changes because now chametz looks good. And in that instant, you would in fact be over on Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh. So in order to avoid a situation like that, we want to make certain that even if you find that birthday cake, that's not going to be mechayev you in Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh, because it's not yours. And until such time as you would actually make it yours and pick it up and say, yum, yum, you wouldn't be over on Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh because of the fact that you did the bit. So basically what we're doing is we're covering all of the angles that we won't eat the chametz. If we find the gluska yafa, we won't be over on Baye Re'ah, Baye Matzeh. We won't make it dependent on people who are not really fully aware of their own minds and how their minds work and how it's part of their relationship to reality. And we cover ourselves in every possible way. But why? I mean, why all of a sudden are we so machmir to be certain that we have crossed every T, dotted every I, and tried to make certain that we wouldn't come to some kind of iser? Well, first of all, as I pointed out, this is unique because it's a different space, something that the Torah is never mechayev. B, it's very special because usually an iser of achila is an iser of achila of a kezayit. Now, weirdly, when it comes to chametz, there is an iser even on a mashahu. The Rambam learns this out of a special pasuk, which we'll talk about later. Not the normal din of mashu being that even pochus b'kashir is usher. That's not the point. Because pochus b'kashir is usher because it's chozi le'itztarufe, another term. It's because you can add it to other pieces. But in and of itself, it's not usher. Here, in and of itself, it's actually usher. And this makes nafka minas la'alocha, legabi being over at the last minute of the day when it's not chosiv, it's tarufe. B, it's not going to be batal. Even the tiniest bit of chometz, even though normally, of course, a mashu is batal. We have a din of bitul berov. There's no din of bitul when it comes to a mashu of chometz, as we're going to discuss later on in the Masechta. C, there is a chi of kares, as opposed to, okay, you eat a piece of chazer, a piece of nevela. I mean, you know, so, okay, so it's an iser lav. And as we said, D, eno bodomine. This is something that you are so not used to doing. And it's the only place where the Torah demands the change in space. So because of that, we've got all of these various issues. And putting them all together, together with one more thing, in my opinion, I mean, I haven't seen this anywhere, but with one more thing, we end up with this chumrah. And the one more thing is actually merumas in the very daf that we're going to learn today. And that is that there's no specific time for doing this. As the Torah says, when normally the Torah gives us a mitzvah, it's Erev Shabbos. Okay, it's 3 minutes to Shkia. Run, get everything done. I know exactly what has to be done, when it has to be done. This is a very weird situation because it's the same day. During part of the day, I'm eating chametz. And during the other part of the day, I'm not even allowed to have any chametz in my property if I'm going to be bringing a Korban Pesach. And according to the Rambam, I'm not allowed to have it in my property because Yotz Bal Yira'eh Bal Yimatzeh Ischal even on Erev Pesach. When? Well, midday. Thanks a lot. Like, what is there that shows me midday that I'm going to be aware of? If the day is beginning or if the day is closing, I understand that the Torah gives me mitzvahs that are chal on the day. What in the world does it mean to have a mitzvah that at some random point, which is defined maybe by astronomy, but it's certainly not something that I am going to be aware of? Isn't that a very difficult thing to expect of me to get this done particularly? Now, that itself is a reason for why we would want a clear-cut beginning to the process of Pesach. And that by giving us the mitzvah at night, that as soon as it's nightfall, it's time for us to drop everything and start the Bedikas Chometz, and all of us, I'm sure, have this psychological experience and recognize it, that this is really a very fundamental part of Pesach. That night before Pesach that starts the Bedikas Chometz is our introduction to the whole thing. Now, all of a sudden, everything starts getting really nerve-wracking. What are we going to do about the Chometz? Where do we put it? How do we get rid of it? Et cetera, right? If it wouldn't be for that, so imagine, you know, yeah, breakfast the next morning, you haven't even thought about Chometz yet, and oh my God, what time is it? Oh, shoot, why am I going to get rid of my Chometz now? And so on. So because of that, that mitzvah is really a very powerful stimulus to the entry into the space of Pesach, and therefore, by having a mitzvah that is chal specifically at a time when we're together and can respond to it as a togetherness mitzvah like Shabbos and all of our other mitzvahs of a day, because of that, we have this special din. So again, this is just a brief introduction to some of the issues that we're going to be discussing.